Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So good when you get out of bed. You're always ready to go. I caught you looking like a million bucks when you walk out the door. You got something they call attitude, dripping all over the floor. Nobody says nothing, they just make their assumptions, and now you got them on all fours.
So I'm here in Los Angeles. I'm here to do a bunch of podcasts with LA natives, but by pure chance and coincidence, Mr. Danko Jones is in town. So we finally lined up a talk which I've wanted to do for a very long time.
Yeah. It's great to be on your podcast.
And
I listen to it.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do. I've heard a few episodes.
Which ones did you enjoy?
You're going to put me on this? No, I'm just joking. Let's see. Well, obviously the Johnny Rotten one, the Benji one.
Nice.
Tommy Victor one. Those are the ones off the top of my head. But yeah,
I love it, dude.
Yeah, there's been a few.
Oh, good man.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Did you know Benji prior to the tour you've just done with Skindred?
Yeah, we've known each other for years.
Right. Okay.
I mean, we've played together for years. I found out about Skindred on a festival that we were booked together on. And then, you know, we just, I think we both noticed within each other there was very similarities in our positions and in terms of the music we were doing and the audience we were playing to, et cetera, et cetera. So there was an automatic kind of mutual respect between the two of us. And I'm glad it finally happened where we were able to tour together, and to do it on Skindred's home turf was great.
And with CKY sandwiched in the middle.
Absolutely. The CKY guys are great. You know, Jess and Chad and Matt, they're awesome. And when I went to see them, when they played in Toronto maybe a year and a half ago, I was really surprised at just how the level of musicianship from those three. And Chad, being a singer and guitar player myself, I was kind of... leveled as to you know how well he played guitar and how well he sang, and just everything about his guitar playing was very impressive. And I felt like, you know, we took a photo and I think I uploaded it on Instagram and I said, like, I feel like a hot dog sandwiched in between like a filet mignon of musicians. You know, they're all really good. Matt's a solid drummer, Jess is a solid, I mean, Matt's a solid bass player, Jess is a solid drummer. So yeah, it was great to tour with those two bands. And it was smooth. You know, the best tours always end up being the shortest, right?
Yeah. And you're like, get to the final date and you go, man, I'm just getting into it. I don't want it to carry on forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was... That Brixton show was something special. That was the penultimate show, obviously, wasn't it? Had you played Brixton before?
Yes, we did in 06. Yeah, we did. It's been a while, but yeah, we were there before.
I think it's the best venue in the UK.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, there's, you know, I could say there's a few other ones, you know.
Which ones hold little dear spots in your heart?
Well, when we toured with Motorhead, we played what is it called now in London?
Talking about the Hammersmith.
Hammersmith, but it's called,
I think it's called the Hammersmith.
Oh, it's even
Apollo, is it now?
Or
was it the Apollo? Now it's maybe the OD. I don't know.
Yeah, it's something.
But the Hammersmith venue.
What people know as the Hammersmith.
No Sleep Till Hammersmith,
and of course,
baby.
You know, the history of that behind it. For, you know, for us going into it, you know, I kind of was wowed by that. Manchester, the huge venue we played with Motorhead there, was, I thought, was pretty cool, too.
So. We're obviously in Lemmy's kind of, you know, spiritual home.
Right
now, right by the rainbow. And I guess for you, he was not only a musical hero, but also a friend through the tours you did. And I wonder if you could just tell me a bit about what Lemmy meant to music and then also to you personally.
Well, I mean, he was, God. Yeah, God, I'm at a loss for words. You know, Lemmy was as cool as he was and as dangerous looking as he was. You know, that's what made him so cool to a lot of men, you know, a lot of boys.
The outlaw vibe.
The rebel. He embodied the mythological idea that we have in our head. Here he was live and in person, you know, like he stepped out of a movie, of a comic book. But beyond the look, it was the way he approached his music, the way he approached just as a person. What I really liked about Lemmy more than the music was you can hang, like he doesn't put any cool decorations on anyone like we would do on other people, including himself. Like, what I mean to say is, like, he just took everyone at face value and judged them on what he saw, not from what they looked like or how
famous they were.
Yeah, he just took you as you were. I found that he could hang with anybody. He could hang with, you know, like what people would probably consider really nerdy people, as long as he could see through that. I thought that's what Lemmy meant for me. You know, and I take that with me wherever I go. I don't give a shit if you have the right fucking patch on your jean jacket. I really don't give a fuck. And so that's what I took from Lemmy. And there's a great story that I heard years before I met Lemmy, having to do with Geddy Lee. Being from Toronto and Geddy Lee and Rush, there's a lot of Rush stories that are abound in the city. And the one story I had heard was, I don't know if it's true or not, but I kind of believe it is. Geddy had invited Lemmy to his house, right? And so Geddy's wife, looking at the picture of Lemmy and Motorhead and what that kind of stood for from an outsider, she was dead set against it. And Lemmy came over and charmed the living crap out of her, you know? And that is how I see Lemmy. Like, you know, Lemmy could probably charm my mom, you know? Like, he could charm anyone's dad or, you know, like he's just that kind of person.
A salt of the earth type character, a man of the people.
Yes, I really feel that. And then, of course, let's talk about the music, which was, you know, very inventive, very heavy. It carried this weight for let's be honest, boys who really felt like outcasts. And here was this fucking guy who was really our leader. You know, it's great. And then beyond that, to find out behind the scenes that he was so cool to me. Phil Campbell and Mickey D were very cool to us, the crew, Motorhead crew, which was also another thing about Lemmy, is he
they run it like vaulted, a family, don't
yeah they vaulted the crew up to the status of the band members, so that was really cool too, and how they were treated. And Yeah, Motorhead mean a lot more to I think all of us than just the music, you know. So, and that's another thing, is like, now that he's passed away, yeah, we have lived in we were able to be in the presence of someone that I think people are gonna mythologize and make bigger and deify larger than life as the years go by.
The longer time goes on. I hadn't even thought about it like that, because he was obviously a legend in his own lifetime. What you're saying is he will likely become an even bigger legend.
Bigger and bigger
in years to come.
Although
I'd agree with that.
You know, people have a short-term memory, and it's getting shorter as the days go by. But
it certainly is.
Yeah, I would assume it would get bigger and bigger. And I guess to bring it around to one of the original reason why we're out in LA is because I'm releasing a book. And in the book, there's 4 pages of comic strip panel where I talk about singing on stage with Lemmy, and it was illustrated by Gary Dumb of American Splendor fame. And so that story is true. And that happened on that Motorhead tour we did with them.
Which track did you do?
It was Born to Raise Hell.
Love it.
Yeah, and so you know a song, like I mean even Ace of Spades, like you and I know the song, but then if you were asked to sing with the band in 3-4 hours, do you know all the words? Like, I honestly don't. I would have to run through it a few times, even if it's a song I know very well or I've heard a million times. I've heard, you know, songs a million times, but I still don't know all the lyrics off by heart.
I often find that because I've had moments at karaoke bars where I'm like, I know this.
Right.
And you go up, you're like, I don't need the words. Yeah. And then you kind of go, oh, I don't actually know anything other than the chorus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just the chorus we all knew. So Born to Raise Hell was one of those songs. Like, I knew the song, but I didn't know it backwards and forwards, to be honest. Not like an Ace of Spades or an Overkill or something. And when I got asked to sing that night, it was on the day of the show, I was like, I'm never going to say no. You don't turn Motorhead down. But then I started to panic because they wanted me to sing the song. And then to top it all off, Lemmy asked me to sing it in front of him in his dressing room just to make sure I knew the song. And that was
the most surreal moment.
Nerve-wracking.
That's probably like scarier than the show itself, right?
It was.
Yeah.
And I sang it in front of him as he watched
me. Like, as close as we are now?
As close as you and I are. That's as close as I sang the lyrics of Born to Raise Hell back to Lemmy to make sure that I could get on stage and sing it with him. It was insane. But hey, I passed.
You passed the test, dude. Well, you've mentioned something now. I wanted to talk to you. The reason I've always been really intrigued and inspired by what you do beyond just your music is I'd consider you a bit of a modern day Renaissance man, Danko, in that, you know, you have your finger in many different creative pies. One of the main reasons why I even started this podcast is after interviewing you about your top 10 favorite podcasts. And,
right.
that sent me down a podcast rabbit hole, and I started listening to all the different shows out there, and I was like, wow, I think I'm going to do my own. So that was partly inspired by you, so thank
you
for that.
Oh.
But as well as obviously the podcast, you've got many articles that you write for music magazines.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the book first, though, because you've just mentioned that. Tell us about this new book, what it's about, what the sort of inspiration behind it was, and what's inside the pages.
Well, it is about all my articles. It's a collection of articles that I wrote from the past 10 years of articles for music magazines in Spain and Switzerland and Norway and Sweden and
And do you write
Hungary.
In all their native languages?
No, I write in English and then they translate it. And then you just kind of hope to God they get the translation right.
Yeah. I thought you were doing it in all the original languages. I was like, this guy is unstoppable.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said. I should have just kept with it.
So it's articles from all the music magazines. And then it's obviously like, is there more comics than just the Motorhead one? Or is that
right? Yeah. So I felt kind of uncomfortable kind of selling people something that they may have read before, or maybe even you can see some of them online, I guess, if you look hard enough, maybe. So just in case, I asked some people who I knew were in bands, who illustrated, who drew, to start drawing for, ask them to be part of the book project. And I got a few, and I got a lot who said no, because they were too shy.
Really?
Yeah, like they're, I'm not going to out them, but like, you know, I would see someone upload a picture of Darth Vader that they drew, and I go, hey, dude, do you want to do this thing? And you have to interpret one of my articles, and and that's when they got cold feet, which is understandable. But I did manage to get about 5. So Brian Walsby drew the cover, and he is a drummer. He was in Polvo for a brief stint. He was in Shiny Beast. He was in Snake Nation with Mike Dean and Woody Weatherman of COC. He was in Wax with Matt McCon of Superchunk. And he was in a band with Ryan Adams. And his claim to fame.
That's a broad church right there, isn't it?
His claim to fame is he turned down playing drums for Nirvana back in the day. But he is an amazing illustrator. He illustrated Walk Together, Rock Together 7-inch by 7 seconds, which is like a pretty classic illustration. He's done illustrations for the Melvins because he works for the Melvins now. He's their merch guy. He travels all around the world with them. And I had bookmarked his site because I wanted to ask him to do the cover for years. When I had the idea for a book hatched years before, I'm talking 5-6 years ago, I had the title, I had the idea, but I just didn't have the material. And I wanted Brian Walsby to do the cover because I love his artwork. So I was able to get him. Damien Abraham from Fucked Up, the singer Fucked Up, he did an illustration.
I love that dude.
He's
a real sweetheart.
Yeah, he's a good friend. And Juan Montoya from Torch, Valiant Thor, Valiant himself from Valiant Thor, the singer, he did a comic strip. Away from Voivod did three nice. Or four pages of illustration. And then I ran into a wall, so I started to ask illustrator friends of mine, Gary Taxali, Mary Fleener, Fiona Smith. And then I started to ask people that I was really big fans of. Gary Dumm, who did the Motorhead strip. Mary Fleener, who I'm a huge fan of for her Slut Burger comics. And so, yeah, it just became a big thing. Erie Vaughn from Samhain and Danzig, he did an illustration for it as well. So it became this collaboration. And then Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses wrote the foreword to the book. So there's like a lot. And everyone's music connected. Even Gary Dumm, who did American Splendor comics with Harvey Pekar. Harvey was a jazz critic. He loved jazz, and he would sell his jazz collection to finance his American Splendor comics. So Gary Dumm would do these great biographies that Harvey would write about jazz musicians and bluesmen. And I loved Gary's illustrations in American Splendor for years. So I grew a pair of balls, and I emailed him one day, cold. And we've struck up a great friendship since then. So it's great. And because having illustrators interpret the articles was basically an idea taken from American Splendor. So why not just go to the source, the guy who I used to look at his illustrations for Harvey. So it's great to have that. It makes
full
it,
circle moment.
It's full of, yeah, it makes it feel like legitimate in my eyes. So.
Is there any sort of tour stories, tour diary type stuff in there? Is there a lot of you, or is it more your appreciation of music as such? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
Is there rock and roll stories,
right.
Or is it more like a document of music?
The thing about when you hear a guy or someone in a band writing a book or releasing a book, it's automatically assumed it's an autobiography. A lot of people in bands don't take the role of critic. There's nothing beyond their immediate experience in music, you know, having to do with their life on tour.
Yeah.
There's a few articles about that. I tried not to do it like that. I wanted it to be a little wider and different, to be honest with you. So there is like a whole article about the communal chip bag in the dressing room that every band uses on their rider, and I wrote a whole article about that, like just minuscule stuff.
Uh-huh.
That's so
fresh.
That is the band experience that is in the book mostly. And then there's like I wrote liner notes for I include liner notes that I wrote for other bands like Sacrifice. I wrote their liner notes. Or I'm a huge fan of Death Angel, so I wrote a piece in the Huffington Post about it. That's included there. I wrote a piece on Kiss, who I'm a huge fan / critic of.
Uh-huh.
And so I did a whole essay on their solo albums, and I related it to the RYB color wheel and color theory. And there's things like that. But the book opens up with my fandom for Thin Lizzy. And so that's just how the book starts off. So there is, it's definitely...
It's like your relationship with music.
With music, exactly.
Right on. And what do you sort of make of everything that's been going on with Gene Simmons? Have you been keeping up to date with... Well, I guess it's like every day there's a news story with him. Or not
yeah.
even a news story, a headline which is ran as a news story. But because he was on this show a while back, and the week I was going to publish the episode, I'd lined it up with iTunes to have a homepage feature.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be a really like cool celebratory way to end the year because it was just before Christmas. And then the day before it was scheduled to go live, there's an article that he's been accused of sexual battery by this journalist.
Gene Simmons?
Yeah.
I didn't hear about that.
Did you not read about
was
that?
Was it a Me Too?
It was basically what had happened. Him and Paul were doing an interview to promote a restaurant they were opening. And Gene had like got this girl's hand. I laugh because it's ridiculous. And put her hand on his leg during the interview, and in her eyes that is enough to warrant sexual battery allegations. So this news story starts doing the rounds. Obviously everybody, because Gene is a very easy target, isn't he, because he's bragged a lot about his sexual conquests in the past, and everyone just kind of jumped on him, and so I held the episode back for about 3 months, basically, okay. because I didn't want to add fuel to the fire.
Okay.
And I wanted to see how that situation panned out. But I did actually weirdly speak to Gene, not about that case, but about that sort of theme.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of just painting it in the picture that anyone can say anything about anyone now online.
Okay.
And everyone just instantly believes it. And he was like, oh, here's an example. And he showed me these series of texts that he'd basically exchanged between a guy who had been in a room with Gene when this woman had accused him of a similar sort of thing. And the guy was like, well, I was in the room with you the whole time and you didn't touch her, like nothing happened. So I don't know whether he's just a dude who gets a lot of it. But as a fan of Kiss, like, do you have problems with Gene? Because some people will love Kiss, but go, oh, Gene, he spoils it for me. Where do you stand on, Mr. Controversy,
well,
Gene?
Well, I can see Gene's point, but I also can say that Paul doesn't get those accusations. And I'm Team Paul.
Yeah.
I've said that online. Paul has actually liked my tweets where I've hashtag Team Paul. I am Team Paul till the end. And, yeah, I'm not a big fan of
Gene.
Of what he says. Yeah, like, I love his songs.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big fan of, yeah, what he's been saying lately. Some of the things he said, I think, are outrageous. And, you know, when an accusation like that shows up, I'm not going to comment about that particular case because I just found out about it.
Yeah,
he just
told
me. But I will say this, you know, it comes up, but there's like a past history of his behavior.
Yeah.
Whether it's what comes out of his mouth or what he, you know, professes to have done. But like I said, like Paul Stanley, there's really nothing like that.
There's none of that following him around.
But, you know, yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like how Paul carries himself in interviews, and I like how he is online, you know, in social media. Sometimes he does like come out fighting. He tries to embarrass some people who I think might actually just be his fans. I find that funny. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think Paul's embracing his place in music a lot better than Gene is. And I think Gene is trying to like keep up with the kids, and he's failing.
He's so out of touch.
Yeah, and he's failing.
Yeah.
I think Nick Simmons wrote something about that too, where he is aware of how his father is.
Yeah, I read that. It was a really interesting piece actually, because you kind of actually go, wow, that's the guy's son. And he talked about it so openly and honestly and candidly, didn't he? And unapologetically. Because I think the thing with Gene is I find him hilarious. Because I just think he's an outrageous, over-the-top, larger-than-life rock star. And I think there's still very much a place for that in today's world, where it's all political correctness and it's all, you can't say that, you can't say that. I think people like that, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, I think people like that just keep things a little bit provocative and interesting.
The problem that I have with what he says is we live in a world where rock and roll is not the most popular form of music anymore. It's not even the fifth most popular form of music. It has become seen. It's now people see it as this dumb music liked by dumb people, made by stupid people, and his stupid comments only reinforce that.
Yeah.
And you know, as a guy in a rock band, that's what I do for a living. I, you know, with all these stereotypes of dumb rockers reinforced by what people like Gene say, it's really, you know, we try to like fight the image of the Beavis and Butthead, you know, and the Anvil, these kinds of Wayne Campbell type stereotypes. And Gene's dumb, really dumb comments and really ignorant comments at times doesn't help.
No.
And so on the other hand, I feel like if you don't like rock and roll music, I feel rock and roll is sinking lower and lower, and it's becoming underground now. And that is what I like. I like the fact that it's now been rejected, but I don't like it being rejected via Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that it is now an outsider form of music. It's less popular than indie rock, hip hop, rap music, electronic dance music, even heavy metal, and of course, always pop music. Rock and roll is in kind of side by side with jazz.
Yeah.
And that to me is great because I'm always attracted to the underdog, to anything that's underground.
Where the exciting stuff happens.
Well,
as well,
yeah,
right?
You know, like it's perfect timing that rock and roll is in that position because for me, putting out this book, having it come out on Feral House Press, which is like an imprint that I always was attracted to because it's such an underground, it's just underground culture. And to be a part of it, to be a part of the Feral House family, I mean, my God, that's great. And it helps rock and roll as a whole genre too. So yes, I'm glad in a way that rock and roll is less popular but not due to like people like Gene Simmons. His comments do not help anybody.
How do you think he'll be remembered once he passes away?
Right. The legacy he's leaving?
Yeah.
Things he's doing and saying?
And I've asked him about that in interviews. I've said, like, do you feel any form of sadness that perhaps when you're gone you won't be loved and cherished in the way that people like Lemmy are because of these harmful things that you've said?
Right.
And he's just straight up like, no, I've had a great life. I'm grateful. I leave with, you know, I think he said what he would have on his tombstone would be something like, thank you very much. Good night. Like, that's it. Like,
I believe him too.
Yeah.
You know,
that's kind of why I also admire him in a way, is because he really doesn't give a fuck. And there's so few people, I think. I know he can be harmful. And I know what he says can be damaging. But for me, there are so few people that genuinely don't care what other people think about them in
right.
today's world. And that, for me, again, it's kind of refreshing.
No, I hear you. I understand what you're saying. But there's so many voices these days through social media who are saying some crazy stuff and who are getting the traction that I don't need to hear it from my favorite band of all time.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, just give me that.
I feel you.
Yeah, just give me that place where I can just go to it and not have it, you know,
burdened
by, you know, whatever one member has said or not said.
How do you think he will be remembered, though? Do you think people will forgive and forget once he's gone?
Yeah, I do believe that.
It'd be a shame if they didn't.
At the end, what will remain is, I think, the music. And whatever he said is just an end note or a footnote even that will probably be forgotten.
Because that band, I think of, if you're, say, under 30, no one really appreciates the importance of Kiss. They just, again, maybe because they see Gene as this old guy who says all this embarrassing stuff and they wear makeup, they're like, oh. But Kiss, for a whole generation of kids, were the most important thing since the Beatles, weren't they? They were so
absolutely
huge in terms of what they did for rock and roll and like the culture of rock and roll beyond just songs.
I agree. But what I love about Kiss, and then I guess I'm kind of taking my words back with this statement, but what I love about Kiss is the fact that they are, they've been around for so long enough where they've made enough mistakes to really endear them to people. Like, I love the fact that, you know, this album stinks, you know, like, I'm not going to name the albums I think suck, but the fact that they have albums in their discography, which are really lemons.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it, you know, yeah, it makes them human to me. And throw Gene Simmons's comments in that mix. The fact that he said these crazy things, the fact that Peter Criss has done some awful stuff as well. And it's something he's admitted to in his own autobiography, which I'm so hellishly surprised he actually agreed to put that in. But anyways, all that stuff, it just endears them to me. It just goes, oh, well, you know, sometimes when a band is just completely on and they cannot make a mistake, it does kind of lessen it in a way. It's just kind of like, man, you know, like, for example,
human beings are flawed, right? It makes them more real. It makes them more.
Well, yeah, like, I love Childish Gambino. I love Danny Glover. I think Danny Glover is like a quadruple threat. He can sing. He can rap, he can act, and he has a Netflix comedy special. Like, the guy is insanely talented, and Childish Gambino was my favorite album of last year. But with this new video that's making like millions of hits, I haven't seen it.
80 million views.
I haven't seen
in
it
a
yet.
Week.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. And I was wondering why to myself, why haven't I clicked on this and watched what everybody's talking about? Is because the guy's perfect. You know what I mean? It's getting to the point where I'm like, this guy can not fail. He's the only one who can't fail. He's in the new Solo movie as Lando Calrissian. You can watch his Netflix comedy special where it's really good. And then he put out the album of the year last year to me. Like, and he can rap. He can sing like nobody else. Ah, man, he's amazing. I'm just going to assume the video is awesome, okay? And we'll just move on.
It is interesting, though, because ultimately all the video does is show that America has a problem with gun violence and institutionalized racism.
Wow, I agree with it. And I'm sure he totally...
Yep, you're right. I mean, yeah, I won't go off on one for that because I Google lyriced the song. And the lyrics are literally just kind of, yeah, 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 yeah. So for me, the way everybody's been reacting to that, I'm a bit like, well, NWA said fuck the police 30 years ago, and that was a lot more, for me, provocative and challenging and controversial. But that's just my take. Yeah. But he is a fucking genius. He is he's a Renaissance man. He is a true modern-day Renaissance man.
He's the king. He's absolutely the king. He's funny, and he's... an amazing rapper and an incredible singer, musician.
And a dancer. He can fucking dance too.
See, I guess you learned that from the video, right?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
What's after quadruple? Okay. The Cinco threat.
Cinco threat?
So let's move on to your podcast.
Sure.
How long have you been doing it? You were one of the first musicians, right, to take up the podcast
might
mantle
have been,
and start
yeah.
your own?
Yeah. 2011, I started to do one with where I just would read articles that I was writing at the time. And that got boring very fast.
Oh, that was how it started, was it?
Yeah, I did about 4 or 5 episodes like that. Then I asked my friend Nick Flanagan, who is a comedian, but he's also a singer. He sang in like punk rock bands like Brutal Knights and Teen Crud Combo. He did tours of Europe and America and stuff. And we've been friends for... Well, that's the reason why I asked him, is because we have a relationship where we're friends, but we also fight.
Butt heads.
We argue. Even like off the mics, we've had heated email exchanges. So I thought that dynamic would be interesting and fun to bring on the podcast, even though I knew it was going to eventually drive me up the wall. Nick has since moved to LA and he's a comedian here. But the problem is I'm in LA and now he's back home in Toronto for the next month and a half. So we can't do anything. But yeah, that's how it goes. And so then I started to do more podcasts on the road without Nick, and then he moved to LA, like I said, so I'm just doing it on my own, and whenever we're in the same place, we'll do one. But other than that, it's just been me, and 175 episodes in since 2011. I do it every 2 weeks because that's really all I can handle, and I don't care if I get, you know, Johnny Rotten. Although I'd love to get him, although I would be scared to death to talk to him.
I was so intimidated going into the room, but he was great. He was everything I wanted him to be and more.
It was an amazing podcast. I'm like, wow, he was able to kind of tame Rotten, you know, like to at least like handle him enough to, you know.
Keep things semi on track.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, things could go sour very quickly with that guy. And, hey, I would never argue with Johnny Rotten, no matter how wrong I might think he is. It's like, first of all, A, you scare the living hell out of me.
He's
just
an
by
unpredictable
a
force of nature.
Yes. But I also respect him very much. I mean,
well, he was another guy that was getting shit because he was coming out in the press and basically, again, I think he was just joking and messing with people, but he would say, oh, I support this right-wing politician, Nigel Farage. He's an all right guy. And he, again, like Gene, says stuff just to poke the hornet's nest. And everybody was like, well, fuck this guy. And it's like, well, the thing is the reason you get to wear blue hair or ripped jeans today is because of people like him who were frontline putting themselves in physical danger to create an alternative youth culture and were being threatened by the police and were being beaten up by fucking actual racist like thug adults who would see this guy with a fucking safety pin through his ear and go, you faggot. Like, he was getting fucking shit front line for years and years and years to allow people in the alternative world to be alternative today. And so for me, it's really disrespectful when people kind of don't appreciate someone's contribution in that way and just go, well, he's just some fucking old punk who doesn't know anything.
Well, A, I don't agree with what he said. If he did say that, that's the first time I'm hearing about it. But B, I also treat Johnny Rotten a lot differently than Gene Simmons. I put him in a different...
Oh, so different.
At a different level.
That similarity that they do both say these things that they don't necessarily believe or feel. They just say it.
But I think
Gene Simmons
believes what he says. Punk rock is a contrarian type of music.
Yeah.
It's just your natural country. It attracts natural contrarian. So, yeah, you want to say things that will piss people off. And I get it in 2018, what's going to piss everyone off when you've already sung God Save the Queen and Anarchy in the UK?
Is aligning with the right, yeah.
That would, but I also think that I would give him the benefit of the doubt that there is a tongue in cheek there. But
oh, no,
God, I hope so.
There absolutely was, yeah.
So having said that, yeah, I get it. He's a performer.
Yeah. They're both masters of publicity. Mm. There's a reason why they're saying these things when there's a new book to sell that isn't a new album, it's a new book, so it's based entirely on their, you know what I mean, larger than life persona.
I guess when you graduate to that level of performer, you know, trying to sell books or albums in that way doesn't bother you, but if I was to do that, it would keep me up at night.
Yeah.
I put out a book.
You got this new book out. Let's talk some
shit.
That's
just
then.
How it's. Yeah, no, it's just gonna be the book, man. I'm just gonna say shit like, check it out.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say it. I'm not. Gonna
I worked
say
really hard on it, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, that's about it.
Read it. So we just hijacked the conversation. Going back to your podcast, who have been some of your favorite guests that you've got to meet and speak to and interview?
Well, I would say Duff McKagan, who wrote the foreword, and that's why I got him to write the foreword to the book. Is the last time he was on my podcast was a discussion on being in a band, playing music, and meeting deadlines with your editors on the road, like a discussion like that. So we had very similar experiences, albeit he is who he is in the band he's in. And, you know, he's writing for the Seattle Weekly and he's put out a best-selling book with It's So Easy and How to Be a Man. And
have you read How to Be a Man?
I have not. No? I've read It's So Easy.
I'd be intrigued to read that.
It's been on my to-read list. But then again, I'm a book hoarder. I'm not a book reader. So I've got 3 stacks of books at home by my bed.
Unread.
Stacks. And I just look at it sometimes and I'm like, I'm going to go. For the last 2 years, my New Year's resolution is to finish the stack in the year. And failing.
And it just keeps getting bigger.
I just got a book yesterday. Getting, yeah. At the book event, I walked out with someone else's book. Roger Moretz from Agnostic Front's autobiography, which I'm dying to read too.
Have you had him on your show?
No, I heard him on Damian Abraham's podcast, Turned Out a Punk, and it was awesome. So it really got me to go, fuck, you know what? I got to read the book, you know? So, Duff was one of my favorites. Henry Rollins was one of my favorites, because much like how Johnny Rotten was for you, Henry had heard of me, but, you know, he didn't know anything really about me, and And I sprung the podcast idea onto him. It wasn't something we had scheduled, but he was cool enough to agree to it.
On the fly.
That was what was so cool about Henry doing that. And I would be the same way. Like, if you were to spring this on me, I'd be like, oh, fuck. Because he had to catch a plane. I don't think that's mentioned in the podcast. So in the beginning of the conversation, when I noticed that he was not thoroughly into talking to me, I said, I just need 15 minutes. And in my head, I was going to just splice it with a talk I had with Ian MacKay from years back, which was about 20 minutes. And
then you
I would
got
have
an
cobbled
episode.
Together yeah. an episode. So I guess I just need 15 minutes. So we started talking and I really ran with what I knew he would be into, which is just records and record collecting, which is something I can hold a discussion with you about that. So we started talking about records and noise records and hard to find records. And then I noticed he kind of let his guard down. And when 15 minutes was up, I was like, all right, I got my 15 minutes. It's cool. And he just sat there And I'm like, okay, I guess I can keep going. And we went for another 15, 20 minutes. And it was amazing. He had a plane to catch.
Where did you do it?
We did it in the hotel lobby of the, what is it, the Radisson across from, in it was at the Wacken Open Air Festival, but the hotel where we were all staying was right across from the airport. So the plane was just a walk away, but still, it's a plane you got to catch.
Yeah.
So I really, really appreciated him.
And he was present, even though he had a plane? Was he like there with you in it?
Oh, yeah. But he didn't know me.
Yeah.
He thought for all I know, I could be just some guy who just knows.
Some blogger.
Yeah. Like who just knows, oh, Henry Rollins, you're
12 followers on YouTube.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you were in that band on MTV, right? In the 90s?
Yeah.
So he was naturally guarded, but I wore him down and I felt like me like wearing him down and like him kind of like opening up a little to me was a victory. And yeah. I really appreciated him for that. And I thought about how would I be in that situation? I don't know if I'd be as nice. You know what I mean? So it was very cool of him to do that. And that was one of my hard won podcasts that I still love to this day. But then I do podcasts with basically people that I really respect, I really like. I track them. When I track someone down and I get a podcast with them, those are always those always feel the best. Like I'm a huge fan of Coyle and Sharp, which is a comedy duo from I believe the 60s. And actually Henry put out one of their CDs. He re-released one of their old albums, On the Loose, I believe, and I have it from back in the day. But I also have Mal Sharpe's solo comedy stuff, and anyways, I'm a Coyle and Sharpe fan.
Yeah,
I found Mal Sharpe online, and there was a contact, and sure enough, it was Mal who emailed me back, and I think he's in his 90s now, but he's all there.
Wow!
And so we had a great talk, and I kind of
face to face.
No, it was through Skype.
Right, right.
The guy knows how to do Skype, you know. I fanboyed out on him a bit. I'm like, hey man, like I didn't say man, but I said I love that bit where, you know, you did this and this and this, and he's like, I can't quite remember, we did a lot of those, you know, I can't, okay, I'll take your word for it. It was great. It was such a great discussion. But Coyle and Sharpe to me were, you know, proto everything. Proto Howard Stern, proto Jackass. They were out in the 50s and 60s and just like going up to people and just like talking, creating these crazy zany situations and trying to put people in these situations. And
where they were uncomfortable,
the person that they approached.
Yeah.
And you know, can we open up your brain? We have this new thing and we're going to slice up your brain and we're going to send you. And then the person on the street would go, very innocent. But at the same time, the premise was really cool. If you can put it in context,
that's what you've always got to do. I find
it was like, wow. Like it still blows me away. Some of the premises that they did, like as bits, were like still hold up to this day.
You know, so, who I'd absolutely adore to interview would be fucking Cheech and Chong. I'm not even a weed smoker, but just again, what they did for that culture and for comedy, and I mean, icons, total icons.
Absolutely, and beyond just the comedy, it was for me. They were two like visible minorities in the 70s. Making it cool, you know, and yeah. I really admire, and Tommy Chong is Canadian, I believe. So I have a natural affinity towards Tommy Chong, but, and even recently, like Tommy's become kind of a hero in the whole, you know, legalization, movement and everything for getting jailed, and he's still in it is what I'm saying. But yeah, full respect for Cheech and Chong, absolutely. And I grew up listening to their comedy albums. And
protest heroes.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's talk about the next record. Is there a record in the works at the moment?
Or? Yeah, there's a record where we went into the studio earlier this year with Garth Richardson.
Garth.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, and we were all set to do 4 songs and put out an EP with that session. And then we just didn't want the session to end. And we both parties really got along really well. There were so much things we were... Because Garth wanted to work with us for years, and we did. We wanted to work with him. It's just a matter of scheduling. But we didn't know each other. We just knew each other's work. But then when we were in a room together and we were just hanging, we realized there's so many. Garth grew up 15 minutes from where I grew up. And Garth is...
That's nuts.
Yeah, that was nuts. Garth's school, his grade school, I was directly in front of my bedroom window from the time I was 3 to the time I was 11. So I looked out onto Don Valley Public School, which is where Garth went to school, at the time that I was there. So I could have passed Garth on the sidewalk. And so we both have the same... I go, so you know Peanut Plaza? And, you know, Garth would go, of course I know Peanut Plaza. I used to hang out there. So you were probably one of the kids my mom told me never to be like or hang out. so there's that. So that there was like... There's really direct connections.
Mutual history, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. So, getting back to the album, we're going to continue the session. So the 4 songs are not going to be an EP. It's just 4 songs of what's to become a full-length album with Garth Richardson. And so we're kind of writing. The writing's going extremely well. And we're all happy about it. And we should go into the studio with him in the fall.
I love how prolific you are with everything that you do.
Oh, it's not rocket science. Rock and roll is easier than people let on. I love it when musicians like go on and on about their process.
Right.
And meanwhile, I'm just like rolling my eyes or...
This is what we do. It's good fun.
But it's easier than people make it out to. Like when I hear musicians talk about... Musicians, in quotes. Talk about their lyrics or how they recorded this and that. I'm just going, man, you guys, either this is a joke and you guys are, this is a long protracted joke that you guys are part of. And that would be fucking cool because I'm down with that. Or you really take yourselves that seriously? You douche. It's not rocket science. It's just a matter of finding a good hook, you know? Maybe I'm just...
Well, you got it in your blood.
Quickly.
You're a rock and roller.
I don't know.
It comes
maybe
like
I'm,
second
maybe,
nature.
Maybe makes me sound more douchey than the douches that I'm pointing
so.
Out to be douchebags.
I mean, for me, rock and roll is something that should just come from inside you, and you just feel it instantly. You know, it's like a groove, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so few great rock and roll bands coming through at the moment. Like, say, 10 years ago. 15 years ago when you guys were first coming through and there was that real wave of bands like, I don't know, the Dirt Bombs. All that absolutely. Fucking Detroit garage rock and roll mm-hmm. stuff. Another man who's a very outspoken motherfucker, but before all of that, the music, Eagles of Death Metal, bands like that, just great rock and roll. And we need more. I need more. I love that shit. That's
but
my
there
favorite.
Is more. I mean, I can name you a dozen bands yeah? that it's just like I was saying before, I think rock and roll
They're
has just
out there
been
on
maligned
the fringe a bit more.
Yeah, like, you know, I can name you a dozen. Loot from Norway. Here Lies Man. Admiral Sir Cloudesley Shovel. Wildlife. The Biters. Judah. Faz Waltz. Dead Lord. Jeez, there's a ton more that I'm Night Flight Orchestra, Imperial State Electric. I know there's a ton more that I'm missing. Horisont. Yeah, like
it's out there.
It's all out there, and they're all really good players. The music is top notch. I mean, Admiral Sir Cloudesley Shovel is one of my favorite bands out there right now. Here Lies Man as well. Incredible band.
You a big Turbo Negro fan?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What's Hank up to nowadays? Do you know? Is he still making music or?
I don't really know. The last I heard of Hank, he was in a movie directed by Amir Chamdin of Infinite Mass from Sweden. But that was, I think, going back maybe 4 or 5 years now. But I'm not really sure. But Turbo's doing good.
I love the new stuff they're putting out.
Last few records. I haven't
Rock
actually,
and Roll Machine.
I haven't been able to
songs.
Hear the new album, but it's a matter of just getting to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Going through the stack, so to speak. But from what I've heard from other people, it's really consistent with the last few records. And I love the record previous and the one before that as well. Yeah, they're a very... I think they've found their stride. They're
you
very
Give
consistent.
Me Worms was one of the songs.
That was an amazing,
amazing
album.
Sexual harassment.
That whole album was amazing.
Yeah, it was really
good. It was really, really consistently heavy duty.
You probably get asked it all the time, but when you were starting out, who were the guys, who were the bands that made you want to pick up a guitar and be a rock and roller?
You actually listed them. Mick Collins' stuff, whether it was the Doll Rock, whether it was the Gories or the Dirt Bombs or King Sound Quartet or Blacktop.
So
Mick
he's
Collins.
Got loads of other projects, has he?
Oh,
I only know of the Dirt Bombs.
Yeah, well, he was in the Gories, and the Gories, to me, were laid really the foundation for Jack White.
Yeah,
even
absolutely.
For John Spencer to a certain degree.
Electric Six. It was all kind of in that same.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in that whole Detroit scene, there's so many, like the Go.
Detroit Cobras. Love them. Yeah.
The Von Bondies. Of course, the White Stripes are, you know, what everybody latches onto. The Doll Rods. The Demolition Doll Rods.
If no one's heard the Dirt Bombs who are listening to this, they are the most soulful rock and roll band you'll ever hear, aren't they? Like, they have heavy soul.
Absolutely.
Oozing out of every pore.
But the Gories with Mick, I mean, I know you find House Rockin'. Those are incredible albums that, you know, being 4 hours away from us in Detroit, we were able to hear those albums, and it influenced the Toronto scene, which I think also doesn't get, you know, lauded enough. Like the Leather Uppers, which is to me my favorite garage rock band of all time.
The Leather Uppers. Check them out.
They're incredible. Satan's Archenemy, God.
Well, I love garage rock bands always have the best names.
They have the best names. The Stinkies, which were people from the two bands I just mentioned, but Rugburn, the Deadly Snakes. I was in a two-piece band in the early 90s before we started this band called the Violent Brothers. There's a big scene. I'm for Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet, the Sadies.
So garage rock and roll was really what inspired Danko Jones.
Absolutely. It was like Blues Explosion, the Gories, the Stray Cats, the Stooges, Rocket from the Crypt, all those bands, and you mishmash Pussy Galore, you mishmash it all together, and we needed to do this band.
What I love when you're on stage is you're so different to the way you are now. You know, when you meet Danko in person, you're obviously a very thoughtful, considered, intelligent, well-spoken guy. When you're on stage, obviously you assume the persona of the front man. Do you find people are jarred when they meet you in person? Are they,
yeah,
are they
you see it on their faces.
They're expecting like this.
Sure. But I'm true to myself. Like,
of course,
the adrenaline's running through me when I'm on stage. It's not running through me now. So
it's not. You're not stoked to be on the podcast.
I am stoked. I am stoked. You're right. I should take that back. But the adrenaline that you feel when you walk on stage is something that.
It's why you do
it,
right?
You just never experience it in any other facet of life. Like, it's just, I think that's why people just keep playing, you know? But I don't miss it when I'm not touring.
Sorry,
I don't miss it when I'm not touring, which is an interesting thing.
Really?
No.
You never get that itch after a few days being back home and you're rested where you want to get back out on the road again? Because that's such a common feeling, isn't it?
It is. I've heard
you're
it
just
said,
all right.
Yep. Which is weird, but it's true. I have to be truthful. But then when, for example, tonight, when we get on stage or an hour before, even last night when I was doing the book event, I was like nervous as fuck.
Did you do a reading?
I did a reading. I did an introduction. I did about a 30-minute speech. And then I did a reading. I read three pieces from the book. And that was nerve-wracking. Same thing that's going to happen tonight. I think if you don't have the nerves before you go on stage, you should quit.
Yeah.
But when I'm off tour, life is so it just on tour is just nonstop, and it's not quiet, and it doesn't stand still. So when I'm off tour, I really relish the silence and just the stillness. And it's not that I don't miss it. It's just that
you enjoy both.
I enjoy both.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your question?
I think you answered it. It was, do you ever sort of notice the look of shock in someone's face when you meet them?
That I always get asked about, which I don't feel are two sides at all. I think people who really know me, you know, in my personal life, when they finally see the band, so they've known me before the band and they finally see it, they just start laughing because I've heard it said back to me, well, that's just you on 10.
Yeah.
And they've also seen me when I've been enraged in my personal life or I'm angry about something or miffed about something. And then they it's not as jarring because they've seen me. They've seen that side of me before. So
I've seen that wildcat.
Yeah. I mean, they've seen me just fucking lose my shit on usually the most minor things ever, you know, but you know, they're not as jarred, whereas people who don't, you know, naturally don't know me and then they meet me off stage afterwards are just like, well, what's going on here? Is this an act? People say that's the thing that I want to dispel. Is this an act? And it's not a fucking act. I wrote all those lyrics due to, like, I can't make this, like, it's not Dungeons and Dragons lyrics. I can't make this shit up. Experiences about relationships with other people, whether it's men or women, are from real experiences. The ones about men are usually, you know, about people that I really butted heads with. So you put that in a song. Or the relationship songs are, yeah, like whether a relationship went well or whether it went sour or, you know, I've never dumped anybody. I'm not a dumper. I've always gotten dumped. And I hated that about myself. I'm like, I will hold the torch till you put the torch out. And I always hated that. I didn't have a backbone, a strong enough backbone. But now I go, well, look how many songs were birthed from it. So it's like, no. I actually am glad for that now in hindsight. But that's what those lyrics are about. So when you see me on stage, it's like, this is really me, albeit on 11.
Yeah.
But it is me. And the guys in the Rich and JC, they know, you know, and the crew, they kind of eventually they know if they just started working with us.
Eventually they know.
You know.
I love it because, I mean, I get it. I did my first ever stand-up comedy show 2 nights ago here in LA. I went down to Venice.
Oh, wow.
And did it. And I've been wanting to do it for a long time. I've been writing for a long time. I just haven't, I guess, had the courage.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to book myself onto a show. And then I'm going to tell a bunch of friends so they come. So I have to do it. So I did it. And it was great. And the promoter was like, dude, I was so impressed. You're a natural. Like, you killed it. get on it and do more as soon as you're home and keep the momentum
going. Wow, that's amazing.
New chapter for me. So I get it. I get that idea of it's still coming from you. It's still authentic and sincere and true. It's just amped up because that's entertainment, isn't it? And
yeah, I mean, this volume that I'm speaking to you in, it just, no one's really interested in hearing it like this. You know, you don't want to hear a
in this format.
In this format,
of course.
In this format, yes. You don't want me screaming into the mic. It'll overdrive everything, and you won't be able to hear anything. But everything has its place, you know. But that's one thing I really kind of. It doesn't bug me anymore because now I don't give a fuck. But when I did, because I did, I really wanted to make everybody know that this is me. It is me, without compromising myself and going, well, I'm going to just be this guy off stage too. And I'm just going to, I can't do that, man. I'll be fucking.
Because that's the other thing as well, is a lot of performers, I think, do struggle with that, don't they? Become the character.
They do become the character.
And then they live that in their personal life. And then that's when you obviously run into problems with your health and your relationships, because you're just destroying everything around you.
But I've never sung about anything that I don't do. I've never sung about a drunken night because I don't drink.
Do you not drink at all?
No.
Never have?
No, I don't. Wow. Well, I mean, I'll have a glass of wine with a nice meal to enhance the meal.
Yep.
Whether it's fish, you know, nice white wine.
Of course, yeah.
And I won't even finish the glass, kind of thing. And when I do get drunk, once every 2 years or something, everybody takes out their phones and I feel like a dancing monkey. Yeah. Everybody just watches in amusement. It's happened over, you know, the course of 22 years of touring. Yeah, there's been times where it's like, I'm so fucking bored. I got nothing else to do. Give me another glass. You know what I mean? It tastes good. So I've never painted myself into a corner with my lyrics or my presentation where I can't look at myself in the mirror and go, that wasn't you.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm comfortable with that representation of me.
Absolutely. I lead with people like Ian MacKaye. Those are the people who I looked up to. And Ian is, I think, a marker for a lot of people in bands. And he's become, I think, a default, whether he wants it or not, a default kind of like role model for a lot of people, for me growing up. And there's a funny thing. I think Damien Abraham and I have even talked about, like, what would Ian do? Is what you lead with sometimes when you're at crossroads in your life, especially crossroads doing music and being in the music industry and trying to make sure that punk rock kid in you doesn't turn on you.
Yeah.
In your head. And I can honestly say 95% of what we've been doing for 22 years, I'm cool with. There's always 5%. There's always shrapnel as you go through this in any field of work, whether it's music or whether you just work in an accounting firm, or sell carpets for a living. You know, there's always those moments where you're like, oh, that was the wrong decision, but you live and learn. And I can honestly say I'm very happy with, I can look at myself in the mirror. So it's nice. And being in rock and roll, I don't think a lot of people can say that. So it's nice. And misconceptions of our band, be damned. You just keep trudging on.
Thanks for a great talk, dude. We got it
done.
Thanks,
Matt.
Finally, that seems like a nice note to end it on. It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure sitting down and chatting.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we look forward to some new music real soon, I guess. Oh, final question. Did you do a song with Elijah Wood?
A song?
Yeah.
No, just a video.
It was a video.
He was in a couple of videos of ours that we shot.
Is he a cool guy?
In Los Angeles.
He seems very interested in and involved in music on quite a grassroots level.
Absolutely. He was super cool. Very cool to hang out with. You know, he's like an A-lister.
Yeah.
And I don't have too much experience with those A-listers, so I kind of was intimidated myself. I kept my distance, but he was very open and really talkative about music. And yeah, it was really cool. Really cool guy. Really nice that he was in our video. He was friends of the directors, and they had already turned him on to our band years before, so he knew what he was walking into. It wasn't just another gig he was taking to you know, placate some industry friend of his.
Yeah,
these
yeah,
were real
yeah.
friends, and he was a, I don't know if a fan is, yeah, but he liked
was,
our
he
band.
He was down with the
He
Danko.
Was down. He was down, and that was really cool. I totally respect him for that. And we did it with Ralph Macchio from Karate Kid was in it. Selma Blair was in it. Lemmy was in it.
Oh, wow.
Mike Watt was in it.
Mike Watt as well.
Yeah.
What's the video? I'll have to share it.
Well, it was a trilogy of videos from Below the Belt, the album that Dean Carr took all the photos for.
It's full circle.
Yeah, it's full circle. You know, you hang out in L.A. long enough and it's just a
It's just one big circle, yeah. Right?
So we did a trilogy of videos. The first one was the biggest. So it was Elijah Wood, Selma Blair, Lemmy, and Mike Watt. They starred in Full of Regret was the name of the song. And Lemmy just acted in it. Mike Watt was the narrator. He introduced the video. And we didn't know. We just loved Mike, you know. So I called him up. You want to be in this video, you know? And he's like, sure. And while he was doing his part, because he had to memorize lines, like he had to act.
Yeah.
Nobody knew if Mike Watt could act. He was hitting it out of the park so hard that we were all looking at each other while he was laying down his part, and we were like, "Holy fuck, fucking awesome!" Like it was amazing, and you see it in the video. He does his whole all his lines, and man, it was amazing. He was like my favorite part of the video.
And you got to watch that transformation.
Yeah, we could not believe it. So yeah, Mike is so cool. He's the man, and he always goes, brother Danko, how's it? You know, it's so nice. He's such a nice, warm guy. So it was Mike, Lemmy, Elijah Wood, and Selma Blair, and then we were gonna do another one, and it was directed by the Diamond Brothers. So we went into, we finished the video, and I just said, while we were recording, filming the video, I said, how are we going to top this? This is insane. This is the lead off video for the new album. Where do you go from here? And then the first name that came to my head, because it was just so out of left field, was, what are we going to get the Karate Kid to be in the next video? And then everybody stopped, and then everybody was like, can we get Ralph Macchio to be in the next video? And sure enough, he's in the next video. And that came out of like, just like pulling a name that was so impossible to get.
And as you say, so unexpected.
To do it. And so unexpected to do it. And Ralph turned out to be such a cool dude too. And then him and Elijah both starred in the third video, the trilogy, that final video where he's, Ralph Macchio is Dr. Lee Dorian. So the Diamond Brothers are big, huge Cathedral fans. We're huge Cathedral fans and Rise Above fans. So to put that Lee Dorian in, and the fact that, you know, the Dorian Gray character, that Ralph Macchio just never ages. He never seems to age. So there is that kind of tie-in too. And Elijah Wood is Ralph is this evil scientist, and Elijah's this hitman, and I didn't know what was going on, but it was cool. And so they fight, and JC does a martial arts scene with Ralph. You know, it was really
so
cool.
So good.
Yeah, it was fun. A lot of fun. All done. Oh, actually, two done in LA and one done in New York, I believe. Or, yeah, something like that. I can't remember. It was fucking 8 years ago, man.
I thought you were going to say all done right here in this hotel.
In this pool.
You going for a dunk before the show, are you?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, no, man.
No. Hell no.
I'm the great indoorsman.
Oh, you're the great indoorsman.
Yeah. I don't do the beach. I don't do the sun. I don't do palm trees. I don't do...
You've come to the right town then, my friend.
Pina coladas. I do nighttime. I do no drapes, closed 24 hours a day. No lights, just the light of the laptop.
Love it.
Yeah.
Danko Jones, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for coming on the show, dude. It's been a real pleasure having you on.
Thank you.